Radio Prague News.
Czech intelligence has rejected claims that Manchester suicide bomber Salman Abedi, who spent a few weeks in Libya before committing the attack, flew back to London via Prague. Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka has criticised the 2018 draft budget outlined by former Finance Minister Andrej Babiš shortly before he was dismissed from office. And the country's hygiene officer has moved to dispel fears regarding the possible spread of cholera, which was confirmed in the Czech Republic on Wednesday. Czech intelligence has rejected claims that Manchester suicide bomber Salman Abedi, who spent a few weeks in Libya before committing the attack, flew back to London via Prague. The information appeared in the German daily Der Tagesspiegel on Thursday. Czech Interior Minister Milan Chovanec says neither Czech nor foreign intelligence sources have information supporting the claim. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka has criticised the 2018 draft budget outlined by former Finance Minister Andrej Babiš shortly before he was dismissed from office. At a press briefing in Prague on Thursday, Prime Minister Sobotka said that several ministries had complained they were short of funds for previously approved projects. For instance, the Labour Ministry is reported to be short of 6.2 billion crowns necessary for promised wage hikes in social services, the construction of old age homes and higher state contributions for caregivers. The health, education, interior and foreign ministries all say they are short of funds. Mr. Sobotka said the draft budget had clearly been drafted in haste and he expected the newly appointed finance minister Ivan Pilný to go back to the drawing board. The Constitutional Court of the Czech Republic has upheld an appeal by a father who refused to return his 7-year-old son to his mother in France on the grounds that she had fallen prey to a religious sect and could not secure the boy's welfare. The judge said the arguments presented were valid and the lower instance court to which the case was returned should consider primarily the best interests of the child. The lower instance court had previously ruled in favour of the boy's return, despite a medical expertise which said the child was traumatised following time spent with his mother in France. Christian Democratic Party head Pavel Bělobrádek has stirred controversy with his declaration that he will attend a meeting of the Sudeten ethnic grouping in Augsburg at the start of June. The grouping represents the interests of Germans and their descendants expelled from Czechoslovakia at the end of World War II. The meeting was last year attended by Christian Democrat Culture Minister Daniel Herman. Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek stressed that Bělobrádek was attending as party leader, not as deputy prime minister. Communist Party leader Vojtěch Filip condemned the move. The country's chief hygiene officer Eva Gottwaldová has moved to dispel fears regarding the possible spread of cholera, which was confirmed in the Czech Republic on Wednesday. Two Czechs recently back from Tanzania were reportedly hospitalized with the disease on their return. They have now been released and are in quarantine. The last case of cholera in the Czech Republic was 15 years ago and was also contracted abroad. People travelling to high-risk areas are recommended to get a vaccine, which is available in the Czech Republic. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Friday should be partly cloudy, with day temperatures ranging from 20 to 24 degrees Celsius. Temperatures should gradually rise to 30 degrees at the start of next week. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, the Czech Republic appoints its second diplomat tasked with boosting Czech innovation and research. More on that in a moment. Then, Prague this week hosted the 11th annual meeting of the European Nuclear Energy Forum. We'll have details from that. And today is Africa Day, and we'll be reporting on how a Czech charity is helping in Ethiopia. The Czech Republic has appointed its second diplomat tasked with boosting Czech innovation and research. The country's second appointee is Luděk Moravec, and he will be posted to the United States. Mr. Moravec, who is 37, has until now worked in the Security, Research and Education Department of the Interior Ministry. He is scheduled to start in his new job by the end of July. Earlier, Ruth Frankova asked him what he saw as the main priorities of his new job.
Currently, we are aiming at promoting the cooperation related to the domains of interest for both of the countries. That means in practice that we would like to put some emphasis on defense and security technology, for example, energy or medicine. Although this list is by no means exhaustive, these domains actually cover a wide spectrum of research fields, and thus they also bring equally wide opportunities.
What would you say is lacking in Czech-US cooperation at the moment?
Cooperation between the individual researchers and some of the research organizations is actually flourishing. It's very healthy, especially in fields such as physics, space science, or, for example, neuroscience. We are also mostly ready right now to step up the cooperation in, say, ICT or nuclear technology, to name just a few. One thing which we can actually mention as a gap or downside of the cooperation is the applied research cooperation and advanced technological development, where currently the state of activity is lower compared to, for example, primary research.
Do you know already where will you be based in the United States? I expect you will be moving quite a lot around the country.
So far, I'm to be located at the embassy in Washington. Certainly, the role will require some traveling, although the East Coast itself is an important research hub in many interesting areas. So I assume we will first focus on the eastern seaboard of the United States.
The first Czech diplomat for innovation and research had been posted in Israel. How well this has worked out there?
So far, all the reviews I came across actually were very positive. Posting a specialist in Israel brought forward a significant impulse for bilateral communication in this very specific field, such as R&D, which in turn led to many new partnerships to be built, both between individual researchers and also some of the new partnerships have been established at the level of institutions such as Technical University in Liberec or the like.
Finally, what qualifications have you got to do this job? What are you bringing personally to the job?
Well, apart from quite a significant time spent abroad previously during my studies and a period of service in NATO, which brought me to face the American working ethics, I have worked very closely with the local R&D community for the last 5 years, basically on development of financial support instruments or schemes in R&D, which gave me quite a lot of indispensable insight in the local community, its functioning, its strengths and weaknesses. Also, this role, which I've been performing for the last 5 years, entailed some project facilitation on international footing, so I have already some experience with this kind of work.
And that was Ludvík Moravec, who is the Czech Republic's second diplomat tasked with Czech innovation and research. He was talking there to Ruth Franková. Prague this week hosted the 12th annual meeting of the European Nuclear Energy Forum, an opportunity for those in government, the industry, regulators, and European authorities to get together and try to plot the future for one of the continent's key industries and energy sources. The room for cutting construction costs and how to deal with highly radioactive nuclear waste were two of the main subjects of our debate this year. Chris Johnston has more.
This annual nuclear forum, shared between Prague and Bratislava, was born 12 years ago when the nuclear industry and nuclear power producers in Europe felt they were being marginalised. Climate change demands and the need to cut carbon emissions have, on the one hand, helped put nuclear back in the picture as a future power source. Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka and his Slovak counterpart Robert Fico both attended the forum opening and underlined their commitment to nuclear as part of Europe's long-term energy mix. Bohuslav Sobotka.
For our country, the question of stable and reliable energy supplies are very important because we are part of Europe's industrial core. We expect industry to go through a far-reaching modernization and digitalization, and without doubt there will be greater demands on energy systems as regards their reliability and ability to supply sufficient electricity.
The leper syndrome attached to nuclear has probably declined over the last decade or so, but the industry still faces many problems and challenges, both of its own making and imposed upon it. Many of the plants produced in the heyday 1960s and 1970s are now reaching the end of what was expected to be their operational lifespan, but they're being continued because the replacement plants have not been built. The replacement plants are delayed or not being built at all because of problems with new designs, extra safety features being tacked on, and because the massive initial construction costs make building new nuclear an expensive undertaking when electricity prices are so low and there's no certainty how they will evolve. The Czech Republic is typical of where the European industry is right now. As the Czech Prime Minister outlined, there is a commitment to building new nuclear plants.
I would like to confirm the intent of the Czech government to intensively work on the construction of a new nuclear unit at Dukovany. We would like during our term to make all the preparations possible so that this can go forward quickly and smoothly, and during this process we'll put the emphasis on transparency, efficiency and safety.
But government ministers have in the past clashed over who and how the new nuclear units will be paid for. New finance minister Ivan Pilný, though, promises he will try to make a breakthrough here in the few months he has before October's general elections. And even if that problem is solved, the Czechs will be looking to select a nuclear power plant supplier from a potentially thinned-down set of candidates. US supplier Westinghouse is in bankruptcy protection proceedings, with its Japanese main shareholder also facing problems. And France's Areva is in the middle of restructuring. That leaves Russian, Chinese and South Korean suppliers in pole position.
Chris Johnston with that report. And a reminder that you're listening to the English Language Service of Czech Radio with me, Jan Vellinger. If you'd like to comment on anything you've heard in today's program, please write to us. The address is english@radio.cz. And of course, don't forget, Radio Prague is on the social networks, Facebook and Twitter, so you can also leave comments there. Now, though, it's time for today's main feature, hosted by Danila Lazareva.
Africa Day, celebrated both on the African continent and around the world on May 25th, is an opportunity to take stock of the continent's development, achievements and problems. Today, Africa is frequently mentioned in connection with a migrant crisis and the need to help the hundreds of thousands of people who are displaced or leave their homes due to military conflicts, drought or extreme poverty. I spoke to Lenka Peškova about how the Czech branch of ADRA is helping in Ethiopia, presently the biggest host country for migrants on the continent.
In Ethiopia, we are collaborating with our partners from ADRA Ethiopia, and we have been working in the cross-border area of Ethiopia and South Sudan, which, as you maybe know, that South Sudan is right now in a very difficult situation, and there are many migrants coming to Ethiopia. And in the region Gambela, we are supporting one refugee camp. And there are many NGOs working on several tasks. And ADRA is an organization experienced in wash and sanitation. We are constructing latrines. And also we are promoting the hygiene behavior and proper hygiene habits among the inhabitants of the refugee camp.
How many migrants, how many refugees are in that camp? You visited it in person, so tell us a bit about the conditions there.
Once you visit the camp, of course, you get very frustrated because you can see hundreds of people living in very poor conditions. And in the Jebel refugee camp where we used to work, there are many 40,000 people living there. The people coming to refugee camps, they are usually coming from the cities. Or they might be coming from rural areas, and they are used for different conditions. So their life gets really changed. And they are coming with many trauma and with a lot of memories coming from the war zone or similar.
What kind of conditions are they living in there? What are the main problems? Do they get enough medical assistance? What do they do all day? What, sanitation, that kind of thing?
Mm. Yeah, of course, it depends on your personal feeling because the main problem can be almost everything. So there is not enough access to medical care. There is a lack of latrines, as I said. There is no school, or there are just a few schools supported by some NGOs or government. Simply, like the living conditions, you can imagine a big tent where many people live together, like maybe 100 people can live together in one tent, and there are several like separated parts by the plastic sheet, and it's separated for one family. They have just like very limited space to live. And once they are living there for a longer time, they can get like a simple shelter where like it's for each family, it's one shelter. And they are simply, you can see just the place for the fire, and you can just see some few things they are using. But everything is very, very simple. And but like the people, they are usually not complaining. And you can see them in quite good mood. So you have this kind of mix of feelings that you can see such a poverty, but people are not complaining too much.
Do you feel that the international community is doing enough to help in such camps?
Yeah, I think that like the international community is doing a lot, because if there is no international community, I cannot imagine the conditions in a camp. But of course, like always, you can do more, and you should always think about some kind of responsibility or solidarity with the people which goes through such difficult conditions.
You're also helping the country to fight the effects of drought and famine.
Yeah, that's true. We are reconstructing the water wells in the Somali region, in Ethiopia, near to Somali borders. And we simply try to reconstruct water wells. And after the water well is reconstructed, we also like train the water committee, which consists of 5 people, including men and women. And their task is to take care of the water well, about the technical condition, and also like to train people using the water well to use it from like hygienically, that like they protect the water well from some infection, and they also collect money. And once they have a fund, they can use it for the maintenance or reconstruction. So we consider it as a more sustainable way or more sustainable approach to help the people.
What is cooperation with the locals like?
Once we support any community or collaborate with the community, we always have to agree like what they want and what are they able to contribute. We never work in a community which is not interested in collaboration. And if we try to support them or if we want to start the collaboration, we also want them to collaborate, not to simply to receive the aid or help.
What I meant was, is the attitude of the people, you know, are they looking for a quick solution by simply migrating somewhere where conditions are better? Are they willing to basically stay where they are and fight this, which may be a long-term battle against drought?
Yeah. Like, sometimes I have to admit that I really admire these people, that still they are having an energy to fight for their life and some better condition for their children and family. But, for example, when we are talking about the latrines construction, we provide them the technical solution and we provide them material, which is really very expensive for them once they are not getting any money. And they are providing the unskilled labor, so they are digging a pit, they are helping to erect the latrine and so on. So the community is usually helping us or supporting us with unskilled labor. And it's also supporting their ownership of the latrine or water well or whatever we are providing. We do all the possible to support ownership that once we leave, they know what's the work behind and they know it's there. So we want them to take care of
take responsibility for some of these projects. You visited these areas. Do you feel that the young generation is, probably the older generation is used to the hardships, but is the young generation willing to stay or are they moving to bigger cities? Are they looking to move abroad?
Of course, I think that there is the nature shift from rural areas to cities, because they might feel there are more opportunities. But in real, the cities are bringing more poverty and more difficult conditions. So we try to support the rural areas in order to set up some conditions for people to be able to live there and don't migrate, because the migration doesn't bring more positive impact for the communities. And regarding the young people, I think that they try to get abroad to study, but they usually say they want to come back to help their community. And even I met some people in Ethiopia, and they used to study abroad, and they came back, and they are working for some NGOs, and they are a great match because they know the community, they know the language, and they know like the standards, and they are qualified from the universities.
I understand that ADRA is also helping in the health sphere in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how?
Yeah, that's true. As ADRA, we used to work in the health sector for many years. And, for example, we have supported some hospitals, and we are focusing on the child and mother health, which is a big problem in Ethiopia, that there are many mothers dying during the giving the birth. And also the children under 5 years, they are very much under the risk of some malnutrition or not proper feeding. And in the hospital of Leku in Sidama zone in Ethiopia, we have supported the newborn unit or child care unit. And we brought some technical equipment as an incubator or some simple ambuvak or some similar technical equipment. And but once we donate the equipment, we also try to give as much training as possible to provide some manuals and to be sure people know or the health workers know how to use this equipment and how to help people properly. And the hospital we have been supporting, we try to help them to get some license and to be independent hospital. And like a few days ago, I have realized that they were appreciated by the government and they get some prize and they have obtained some financial amount to invest into hospital. So we are really happy that the energy we brought into hospital has been multiplied. And now they can develop the place even more.
I understand that women in Ethiopia are a big partner, that basically as far as hygiene goes and health matters, that you spread awareness among women who spread it further. Is that right?
Yeah, that's, you are definitely right, because women, they are much better partners in any type of enlightenment activities and so on, because they always think about their children and their family. I don't want to say that men, they don't think about their children and family, but for example, in a Gambela refugee camp, the 80% of population are women and children. So in general, we as NGOs, we or government, there is a big support of women because they are really very trustworthy and responsible partners.
You've personally visited some of these projects in Ethiopia. Have you witnessed fundamental change, or is that a long-term process?
Yeah, yeah. For example, in Ethiopia, I used to live there some years ago, and now when I come back, I'm always really surprised that the mind of the people is kind of developing and their behavior is changing, and the technical conditions are changing as well. But it doesn't mean that the progress that you can imagine the situation as in Europe, for example, that's still, like, if you go to city in Addis Ababa, for example, you get all what you want. You have a restaurant, you have a cinema, you have a swimming pool. Everything can you can get as like in a European city maybe. But if you go to a village, you hardly get, I don't know, some comfortable conditions. You have to go for the water, you have to fetch it. The electricity is not stable. People are living in very simple conditions, in poor conditions. And they have to go to school for several hours per day. And maybe in a school there are 50 students per one teacher. And this is like the picture of the normal village. But in the refugee camp, it's even much more difficult. That even you have access to water and so on, you have no access to education. And we simply get a generation of people with no education, with no skills or experience to live out of the refugee camp. So we always try to support even the hosting community. And once people get to refugee camp, we try to help them to go to live in some villages and to live the normal life. Don't stay in a refugee camp for a long time.
You said the attitude of people was changing. In what way? The reason I'm asking is that with this migrant wave, you're also getting some economic refugees, migrants and environment migrants. Do you feel that it's tempting people to move just because their life is hard where they are?
It might be, of course. Just like if you imagine that you have not enough food for your children, and you know that your children are not having a future at all because there is no school or there is no any access to information, and you know they will suffer same as you feel you suffer, you might try to do everything to help your family and to help yourself. So I don't want to judge even the economic migrants.
Is there still a chance to fight this, to change it? Is there still a chance to make life easier for them there?
Of course, I think there are many opportunities. Like we can talk hours and hours, and I could give you suggestions. What could we do together to help people in Africa or anywhere in the world to improve their life, health, access to education, access to water, safety, equal rights, and so on? There's always many tasks or activities you could do in order to support their lives. But of course, I don't know where is the limitation, where is the border that people, they feel comfortable and safe, or they feel not comfortable, not safe, and they decide to migrate.
And that was Lenka Peškova of the Czech branch of ADRA talking to Daniela Lazarova in today's main feature. That brings us just about to the end of today's program. Don't forget, though, for all things Czech, many more features, news items, features, and all sorts of good stuff, visit us online. The address is radio.cz. I'm Jan Velinger. Thank you so much for joining us this day, and take care.